Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
I'm Troy.
And I'm MC. And this is the best animated shows ever. So far. Where we watch, discuss, and rank every animated show ever. Eventually. And today we're watching episode 2 of Rurouni Kenshin, Kid Samurai, A Big Ordeal, and A New Student.
Rurouni Kenshin, right?
Rurouni
Kenshin. And also, they don't say Kenshin. I noticed watching this episode. Actually, it was in episode 3 I noticed. I'm pretty sure she says Kenshi. No N at the
Kenshi?
End. I'm almost certain that's what Corey, which I figured out her name finally, calls him, is Kenshi, I think. Maybe not. Anyway, before we talk about episode 2, MC, we got to do behind the scenes stuff. And not behind the scenes stuff. We did that last time. This is just our this is just our random stuff. And MC, you know what? I've been working real hard to familiarize myself with the world of the samurai because it's not something I've known very well before this. So, I've given myself some homework. I watched all of Seven Samurai, which is a very long movie. And I've read a couple of Usagi Jimbo stories, which is the bunny rabbit samurai. So I'm going to talk about those a little bit, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So Usagi Yojimbo, I really enjoyed. The art in those is very simple, but very clean and pretty. And basically, it's the story of a wandering samurai. He's lost. His master was killed. And so he's off on his own, just trying to do what he can to make the world a little bit of a better place. And it's really sweet. And there's like overarching plot that's happening in the background. But each issue is just him kind of doing a little bit of an adventure. And I really like it a lot. Have you ever read those?
No.
I found the first book, like the first collected graphic novel of it, at a thrift shop in Central Oregon. And I bought it, and then it sat on my shelf for a really long time. And then when I found out we were going to be talking about Rurouni Kenshin, I pulled it off my shelf in order to start reading it. And I don't know where I put it, but I can't find it anywhere. I never started reading it. I pulled it off the shelf, and then it just disappeared, and I have no idea where it went. So instead I went on to Hoopla, which is this digital library service, and I had to download a digital copy of it, and I've been reading it that way. I still haven't found my copy of it. I don't know where it went. I have no idea. But anyway, yeah, they're pretty good. I would recommend them if you're in the mood to read something here anytime soon. Look them up because they're short. Like reading a chapter of it, which is like a fairly self-contained story in most cases, is like 6 minutes maybe. Like it's really breezy. But then I watched Seven Samurai. Have you seen Seven Samurai?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of different versions.
This was the Kurosawa one. I finished it today. I started it like 2 weeks ago. That's a long movie, MC. It's like 3.5 hours long.
Yeah.
I have a child.
It's really good, but...
And it's not dubbed. It's all subtitled. So I watched Seven Samurai. I only actually absorbed probably about 30% of what happened in Seven Samurai because my child was distracting me for the other 70% of the movie. But I liked what I saw. It did feel like it felt like it was a lot longer than it needed to be. And I know Kurosawa's like recognized as a really great filmmaker and stuff, but like, I mean, it's a different era of filmmaking, I suppose, but it seems that movie could use another pass in editing and really trim it down a little bit. And it'd be a lot more easier to watch because it was just real long.
I mean, you might want to have a look for one of the other versions and
okay.
Watch that before next week, just because those are more modern versions and they are cut down a fair bit.
See, I only knew of it as a Kurosawa movie. I didn't realize there were multiple versions. So
yeah, that story's been told a few times. In fact, well,
Go ahead.
There's a Western.
Magnificent Seven. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. That's actually the next movie I was going to watch, but I couldn't find anywhere to watch it. But I was going to watch it next. One thing I will say about Seven Samurai, that Kami Vice Prize, Seven Samurai is a story. I think it's taking place in the same era. Is it the Meiji era?
Yeah.
Anyway, Meiji. Where it's like post samurai. So like there's not supposed to be samurai, but there's a lot of samurai. And these villagers need to hire some samurai to come protect their farm. The thing that caught me by surprise that I didn't expect was to see a man in a thong kick quite so much ass, because one of the samurai wears like full on samurai torso armor and a thong and nothing else. And the samurai armor does not cover his butt at all. So he's like this kick-ass samurai in badass armor with his butt cheeks hanging out. And I wasn't expecting that. Very much caught me by surprise. And it was one of those things where I was like hanging out with my kid. And then I looked up at the screen and was like, was there a scene where he lost his pants? Did he have pants at some point and they went away? Or there's just no pants to these armor. And I think there was just no pants to his armor.
I want to point out, it's not a thong.
MC, define a thong for me.
No, it has another name. I can't remember it right now, but it's a traditional Japanese undergarment.
Right.
Not a thong.
That's true, and I was not calling it a thong as a way to be culturally dismissive. It was literally a moment of shock where I just looked up at the screen and was like, why doesn't he have pants on? Like, the other samurai are all wearing pants, but this one was just like, screw that. Like, I'm going to just let my butt cheeks hang out while I kill all these dudes. And he killed a lot of dudes. It was pretty cool. There was one part I was confused by where he, like, took out a bunch of swords and stuck them all on the ground and was like, I can't kill five men with just one sword. And I'm like, but you only use one sword at a time. It's not, like, I've seen that in Westerns where, like, you line up a bunch of rifles because it takes so long to reload, so you're gonna like shoot and then toss that one aside and grab another rifle, and that's what he did with swords. But you don't have to reload a sword.
Sometimes they get stuck in armor or in people, or you can just like lose them because, well, you're in melee, and you can easily get disarmed.
That is a valid point.
At any point.
I had not considered.
So having multiple swords doesn't sound like a bad idea. But having him just stuck in the ground seems like your enemy could just walk up and grab them.
Those are swords for the taking.
Yeah. So I've played a little bit more of Ghost of Tsushima, where you do very non-samurai things. I snuck around in an enemy's stronghold, killed everyone, and took over and freed the area. I did that a couple of times, actually. I did a village and like an actual stronghold, what the Mongols were holding. And the stronghold had a bunch of essentially firework-propelled exploding arrows that were in, like, this is a thing that the Chinese had. So essentially you like have a whole bunch of arrows with like black powder and stuff on them, and it's like a firework, and you can like, it's like a big wooden thing that has like a bunch of slots in the front, and you lift up the back and you aim it where you want to shoot the arrows at.
Okay.
And they fire off and explode with black powder.
That's intense.
Yeah.
I
snuck up there, killed all the guys that were manning those, and just used that to take out the whole base.
So you actually like wield that? Is it just like a turret mode, basically?
Yeah.
Interesting. IMC have actually been playing a little bit of Ghost of Tsushima as well. I finally got it from the library. And I like it. I do not think it is nearly as amazing as the hype led me to think it was going to be. My biggest complaint is that while it is a very, very pretty world, it feels very empty to me. It's the same problem I had with Red Dead Redemption 2, where I'm like, wow, you made a gorgeous world. that I mostly don't care about because I'm pretty much just going to whatever the next thing is.
You're wrong, kind of.
Okay.
There is... Well, I'm... Have you gotten to Fox Dens and, like, the collectibles and all that sort of stuff?
I found one of the Fox Shrines, and I saw a golden bird, but right when I saw a golden bird, some villager was like, oh, the Mongols are killing my wife and child. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll go try and save your wife and child instead of following Tweety Bird to find some cool secret. And then when I came back, Tweety Bird was gone. But also the guy's wife and child were already dead anyway, so there was no point in me wasting my time on it.
There is a lot of, like, space in the game, but there's, like, shrines and other things that you need to go finish. There's bamboo cutting things.
I found one of those.
Yeah, so that builds up your resistance thing. And so all those things are actually quick travel locations.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes. So that's why you need to go find all those things so you can just jump around the map.
Okay. And I mean, the map I'm sure will grow on me a bit as I play more, but at this point...
Have you zoomed out yet?
No, I haven't really investigated the map much yet. But here's the thing, is the game in general does a lot to try... to not be video gamey. I feel like it is trying to be more immersive in things like Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, you have a map in the corner of your screen where it'll draw a line on where you're supposed to go, and this game's like, we don't want to do that, we want to do something more artistic. But what they do instead is this thing where, like, you just touch the touchpad and the huge gust of wind blows across the screen in the exact direction that you need to go, and, like,
it does things like particle physics. Yeah,
it looks great, but it pulls me out of the experience more than having a HUD with a line on it would. Because I'm like,
why?
Because that's not real, MC. If you're a samurai riding around an island in Japan, you don't have magical wind blowing to tell you which direction to go. That's some fake-ass bullshit. And it's just, there's a lot of stuff like that where, like, they're trying to be really like, ooh, look how immersive we are. But it feels... more cheesy than normal. Another one, like, you do a lot of investigating in this game, which is a cool idea, except for the investigating is literally just like a little icon shows up and you walk over to it, and then another icon pops up and you walk over to it, and I'm like, I wish it wouldn't give me those icons, because it'll be like, there's a big blood stain on the floor, and I'm like, I bet I should check out that blood stain, but the icon's telling me to go over here, so instead I go and look at, like, somebody's plate of food, and my dumb samurai is like, a plate of food. The attack was sudden. As opposed to all of those luxurious attacks that aren't sudden. You know how sometimes the Mongols attack you, like, slowly instead of... No, it's bullshit. Of course it was sudden. It was an attack. And then he's like, oh, look over here. There's a knocked over canister of arrows. They were surprised. And I'm like, yeah, again, it was an attack. And then he's like, oh, look, a pile of blood. Somebody died here. And I'm like, I saw that 10 minutes ago. Why did you make me go look at somebody's plate of food at...
You can actually skip all that stuff and just go straight to the puddle of blood when you find it.
Why does it pop up? It makes me... I don't know. There's weird things like that.
See, you see the pop-up and you immediately think, oh, I need to go in over there. There's the investigate mode where you go into, like, black and white and, like, things pop up and there's, like, shiny stuff and you, like... You look around. So what you want to do is, instead of going up and, like, immediately investigating the first thing you come across, you want to walk around a little bit and find, like, the three or four things that he wants you to investigate. And you can actually just skip them.
You can go to the one find that the actually last matters.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool, but I wish it just wouldn't give me that pop-up immediately, because I'm like, well, I guess I'll go... do that, no, then.
See, that pop-up is a trap. That's like, hey, this is story over here.
But it's boring story when it's...
Yeah.
It was a sudden attack where they were caught by surprise. Yeah, no shit. That's what an attack is.
I did that the first time as well.
It's been
all the time since then, I've gone straight to the blood and been like, oh, I'm going to follow this blood and these footsteps off into the distance because obviously the Mongols went that way.
Right, right. And then the final thing is the actual stealth and the fighting and stuff I think is all pretty fun. I don't like that the game keeps criticizing me for being stealthy, where it's like,
oh, yeah.
Hey, I'm going to give you a flashback to when you were a little kid and make you feel real bad about being stealthy. I'm like, fuck off, game. I want to be stealthy.
That stops. That stops. Good. Like, yeah.
But
after you get your uncle.
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
I have one more like quest line to do before I can go rescue my uncle. But anyway, the thing in there that I don't like though is the standoffs. I hate it. I was so excited about the standoff mechanic because I've heard you talk about it. I've heard a lot of podcasts talk about it. It's just a goddamn QuickTime event. It's just hold down the button until you let go of the button.
Oh, that's because you're still at, like... I mean, yes, it's going to be like that. And you, like... There's, like, a tapping for, like...
Next
person who comes up.
Yeah, I saw that skill's available. But I thought that what it was just that, like, you called out a guy, and then you just had a one-on-one duel with him where you, like, you were just fighting, not just holding a button and then letting go of a button. I was like, oh, that's kind of boring.
So that's just for like random like troops that are around.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to a boss,
yeah,
there's actually like duels and stuff.
I've done one like mini boss fight at a fort, and I was like, that's cool, where it's just guy. Oh,
when it's a boss, shit. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But if it's just like random dudes, of course you're going to cut them down with one shot.
It's just the fact that it's a quick time event is what bothers me. That it's like, hold the button and wait for them to signal that you're supposed to let go of the button. I'm like, oh, okay.
So, yes, but at the same time, as it goes on in the story, they have like feints and stuff.
So yeah, you don't got to where they can faint.
Yeah, so it actually gets harder, and I've actually been having more trouble now, and I'll get, like, two or three guys, and I have the armor that will let me do, like, take out five guys, and I still might only get three or four of them, because, it does get more difficult. Of course, I've been, I told you, I think last time, like, I took out a whole group of guys and one guy just took off running.
Yeah.
And I just shot him through the bamboo. Like, that stuff's fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can just let them run off. I'm like, yeah, oh, that guy's gone.
The actual combat I think is really satisfying. And it's really brutal. Like if you get hit like three times, you're dead. And that's,
oh yeah,
super intense. There was one fight I got into that pissed me off because I just kept dying over and over again, and it like to the point where it was irritating, and I was like, okay, I need to slow down and focus. But that's the thing, I think this might have been, no, I had just gotten the samurai order from the Lady Mom something quest,
yeah,
where you go to the Golden Temple. I had just gotten that armor, so like the first armor you get. But what was happening was I was being impatient, and so as soon as I was like, all right, just slow down and pay attention, watch for your opportunities, then I was able to get through it. And that was really satisfying, because if you just try and button mash your way, like if you run into three guys on a road, you can pretty much just hammer on the buttons and you'll beat them. But when you get into an intense situation, like you actually do have to be paying attention to the combat, which is pretty damn cool. Like that's a cool thing to have to pay attention to. So
yeah, like if you accidentally alert a guard or something at like a village or a base, it's not three or four guys that come after you. It's like 15 to 20 guys that come running at you, and you have like three or four of them are standing back and they're archers and they're firing at you.
Yeah.
And it can get really intense. So later on, there's like more armor. You get a bit like, as you level up, you get health. So instead of being like three hits, it's like five or six. And like all this stuff, like, and like the armor can like reduce damage depending on the armor, and there's other outfits that will, like, when you're traveling, there's a travel outfit that reveals more of the map.
Oh, cool.
As you travel. So, and as you upgrade it, it actually expands further and further. So, that helps you find, like, all the little things around the map a little bit easier.
Okay.
I've actually got it upgraded to the point where, if there's anything important around, the, controller vibrates a little bit.
Ooh, I like that. See, I like that kind of stuff. And, like, the rumors where, like, you'll talk to someone in town and they're like, oh, I heard that there was, like, this guy who won't leave his homestead even though the Mongols have showed up. And it's, like, rumor location added to map. I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of a cool way of doing it. But it's just, it's a weird balance of, I feel like the game really wants to break format on some typical open world video game tropes. But the way that they broke the format, like, the wind guiding you to your objectives, I find that more silly than if there was just a map in the corner, personally.
So,
but it's good. It's a good game.
Yeah, no. I don't really agree with that, because I find, like, once you get into the game a bit, like the wind, you can, like, put markers anywhere on the map and it'll lead you to that mark. It doesn't have to be a specific quest or anything. It can just be, and I find if I'm just traveling in a general direction to, like, expand the map, I just want to put a marker down and then have the wind sort of lead me in that direction, and I get to discover more stuff in this beautiful scenery. So I feel it's letting me be immersed in the game by, like, not, this is the way, this line, go along this line, sort of thing.
Hmm. Maybe as I start wandering more, I'll feel that way, but I feel a lot of pressure because, like, I don't have all my abilities right now. I think that's part of what's bothering me, is that I'm just trying to, like, hit the main quest because I want to unlock the basic abilities. Like,
that's because
I just got a suit of armor finally, I got my bow, and I got assassinations, and I'm finally like, okay, now I feel like I'm actually, like, ready to play.
There's one more thing that you need to get. But other than that, before you go rescue your uncle, you need to explore, because there's a lot of stuff, and you can, like, upgrade your health and your ability stuff, and a lot of that's going to come in handy as you go into that sort of area.
Okay.
I don't want to give too much away.
No, that's fair. That's fair. We have spent way too long talking about this. This is not Ghost of Tsushima podcast. This is a Rurouni Kenshin podcast. So we will be back to talk about Rurouni Kenshin Season 1, Episode 2. Kid Samurai, Big Ordeal, and a New Student, right after these messages.
Hi, this is Troidal Power, the host of Troidal Power Presents the Power Playthroughs podcast, the podcast where I, your host, Troidal Power, play through games in a powerful way. And right now on Troidal Power Presents the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power, I, your host, Troidal Power, am playing through Golden Sun. You should come listen to me play Golden Sun on Troidal Power Presents the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power. Find it and a lot of other weird stuff at probablywork.com.
And we're back.
We are back, MC, to talk about Rurouni Kenshin Season 1, Episode 2, Kid Samurai, Big Ordeal, and a New Student. An episode wherein they decide, hey, we all been working real hard at our dojo here. Let's go find some food to eat. And so they go into town with Kenshi, who has a sword on his waist, even though that's illegal. And I'm still really bothered by this. I don't like this man who's walking around with a lethal weapon that is not legal for him to have. It really bothers me.
I mean, it's a reverse blade.
It's still a sword. The law is you can't walk around with a sword. That's like somebody walking around with an AR-15 and going, oh, but there's no bullets in it. Yeah, but it's still a gun.
See, here's the thing. in this time, there's got to be, like, a bunch of samurai and ronin with swords still. Defying just walking around. Law. Yeah. Like, they can't pick up everyone, I'm guessing.
Well, can't they? We'll talk about that next time. In this episode, though, there's a worse criminal on the streets than Kenshi, because there's a small child who's stealing people's pockets. He's picking their pockets, MC. He's stealing the money out of their pockets, and he's taking the money away with it. MC, I struggle with this episode. This episode, MC, is there's a little kid, and he's stealing money. And then they're like, hey, stop stealing money. And he's like, oh, but I got to because I'm in debt to this gang. And they're like, oh, well, we're going to get you out of debt from that gang.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Help me, MC. You're my only hope.
I mean, that's what happens. There's gangsters, and they're taking advantage of this samurai child who no longer has a purpose because his family's dead and, like, samurais no longer exist, so he hasn't been
brought up by... This kid hasn't been trained in the way of the samurai, even though he is of a samurai bloodline, apparently. Which is important, I guess? I don't feel like it...
Yes.
I guess it is. But anyway... Well,
you started playing, so you're going to get a bit more of that.
Yeah,
so.
I guess I've seen that a little bit because it's very much like lords and ladies are the ones who are warriors and stuff. But anyway, so he's working for this gang, and we find out the reason that he's working for this gang, which, by the way, MC, this gang seems so modern to me with their haircuts. I assume that you know. I don't know why I assume you know. These aren't traditional Yakuza haircuts from the Meiji era, are they?
No.
They look very 50s greaser to me.
I'm guessing they were... I mean, it's probably the design of the characters. Like, there's one or two characters that kind of look, like they're greasers. But a few of them have a more traditional, like, ruffian haircuts. They're a little bit more shaggier. They're not so well kempt, but the boss is really the main one that you really get that sort of Yakuza big boss dude energy from.
Have you played the Yakuza games, MC?
No, not one.
Really? MC, you should play the Yakuza games.
I know.
Dude, those games are entirely your shit. Oh my god.
Yeah, I know. I've seen people play them, and I'm like, this is right up my alley. And I've never picked any of them up. Not one.
Oh, man. Anyway, so this kid, Kenshi catches him stealing stuff and is like, hey, man, stop stealing stuff. You're better than this. And he's like, no, I'm not. And he runs back to his gang. And we find out that the reason he's working for the gang is because I think they said medical expenses for his parents. Like, they said that they had a loan out to his parents that they never repaid, so the kid's indebted to them. But did they say it was for medical expenses, or did I imagine that?
I can't remember.
Maybe I made that
but
up.
But, yeah.
But then the kid is like, listen, I just met a guy who was pretty cool, and I don't want to be a thief anymore, so I'm going to earn this money honestly. And they're like, bullshit. You're not gonna earn that money, honestly. You're gonna keep being our slave, because you're our slave. Mwahaha.
I think the actual conversation goes, there was never any real debt.
Mm-hmm.
You were a fool. You're gonna continue working for us, or die.
Yeah.
Because, that one of the guys is a manslayer.
Meanwhile, Corey and Kenshin are eating their lunch, and they get told about this little kid and his tragic backstory and stuff, and how he's, like, a slave to this gang. And Corey's like, that's not cool. We're going to go save the day. And Kenshin's like, oh, please don't. Can we please not do this? And she's like, nope, I'm going to go save a child. And she runs into the Yakuza den because Corey kicks ass, but also has just no survival instincts whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. And immediately she, like, beats up a whole bunch of the guys. But then, of course, the second in charge, the manslayer guy, he just, like, pulls out a real sword and, you know, bamboo swords don't do well against real swords.
Yeah, because she don't got a real sword because she's not breaking the law like somebody. Yeah. There's a she whole dice scene where she played dice. She played dice to try and win Yoshi's freedom, the little kid, but they had fixed dice, but she swapped them out for real dice, and then they're like, oh, we're going to kill you now, and then, yeah, she beat a bunch of them up, and then she's about to die, and then what happens? Aw, there's Kenshi shows up with his cool backward sword and does the Kenshi thing, which is to say...
He puts the guy who was the manslayer into the roof.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point that out. He doesn't draw the sword either. He just, like, hits him with the hilt of the sword under his chin and puts the dude into the roof. And then the boss is like, no, no one go after them. Let them go. He has killer eyes. And as they're walking out, you see all the guys Kenshi's come through.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just, like, 50 guys laying all through this hole, just knocked the hell out.
Yep. Presumably using his Godspeed thing, so he probably did that all in like 12 seconds. Wreck shop on his way in. And then they're like, hey, little kid, you want to come hang out in our dojo? And he's like, I just saw how much ass you kicked, so yes. Yes, please. And now then they've got a new student at the dojo.
Yeah, and you're... Yohiko, the young boy who is now the student, thinks Kenshi's gonna teach him, and it's actually Corey, and she gets called ugly by him a bunch.
Was his name not Yoshi? I've been calling him Yoshi all this time.
Yoshihiro?
No, it's Yahiko, you're right.
Yohiko? I don't think it's Yoshi.
It's definitely not. Nope. I don't know why I was Yuki calling Hero. Yoshi.
Yeah.
Whoops. My bad.
But yeah, he calls her a tanuki. Which, is that... I can't remember. That. So, I know...
Tanukis are the raccoons with giant testicles, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty sure.
So he essentially calls her a raccoon. He's saying that she looks like a trash panda.
If by looks like a trash panda you mean is adorable, then yes. I really struggled with this one, MC. I really like the first episode of Rurouni Kenshin, and then this episode just it breezed
by. It kind of feels
by.
Like filler.
It felt like nothing happened, and I mean I realized that there's still like. They're assembling the crew. Like, this character is clearly going to be part of the show, and this is his introduction. But I don't know what it was about it, but it was just... I watched it twice, and both times I'm like, I feel like I missed something, because it's just like nothing happened in this. It's just they...
Yeah,
they...
essentially, they find him on the street, pickpocketing, and then they're like, we got to go save him, because... He's obviously in a terrible situation. They go and save him, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I would add to it, but it feels like it's missing something. I guess what it... I don't know. I almost wanted there... Here's what I would do. Instead of them going to the Yakuza to try to free him, have him try to escape and have him nearly get away... but then run into, like, he's about to get caught by the Yakuza, and then he runs into Kenshin and Corey, and then have her be like, oh my god, we gotta stop these Yakuza, so that there's some stakes, because right now it just seems like he's just gonna stay there, and it's just, I don't know, it felt weird that he was just hanging out, being a slave, and they, like, told him out of nowhere that, like, hey, just kidding, there was no loan. Like, it felt like things kept happening, and I was like, but why did that happen? I don't know.
Essentially, they were dicks, and they were taking advantage of a child.
Yeah.
And it's in this time where they're switching over the legal system, essentially, and, like, the whole structure of the country is getting changed over. It's only been a few years. Mm-hmm. Like, they talk about that the sword law has only been in effect for 2 years. So, right. You think about that, and traditionally, the Yakuza are facilitators of things. So, they grease palms and they get things done, essentially.
Right.
That was their social dynamic that let them come into existence, like many illegal organizations of the like. And in this sort of not so much lawless time, but like kind of lawless or more relaxed law time, it's like people are getting away with a little bit more.
Yeah.
And they're pushing the boundaries, I think, this group.
I'm not sad to see them beaten. It just feels like there was the way that the characters we had met got pulled into it felt a little thin to me, just a little bit. But I'm happy to see the greasers. Excuse me. I'm happy to see the greasers get beaten up. That's always cool. And I'm happy to see Kenshi just like continue to be awesome. The way that he can like very casually wreck shop is very fun to me. It's a little it's extremely over the top, but in a way that I find very entertaining.
I really hope you do watch a little bit more of this show afterwards because it gets even better later. Like
it definitely feels like it's a little bit of a slow burn as it kind of builds up.
Yeah.
The plot and the world and the characters. So, MC, shall we do the best and the worst with the worst first?
Sure.
MC.
I think this was about half a episode's worth of content in a full episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that.
Yeah.
Anything to add to it? Just...
No, that was probably the worst thing. Like, they could have put extra story into this. It just felt like filler, really. Yeah.
I think my specific worst aspect of that is the fact that the, like, start of the action in this was, let's go get lunch, man. Like, hey,
oh yeah.
You know what the plot of this episode's going to be? Let's go get lunch. And I'm like... Okay, I guess that's the inciting incident is that they go out to get lunch. Yeah. My best thing is though when Corey switches the dice, because all these freaking Yakuza MC, they're like, yeah, we'll play dice, and if you lose, you have to be like our sex slave or something. And she's like, okay. And they're like, we've got loaded dice, we're gonna win. And then she rolls the dice and she wins, and it's just very good. Like, I love that she's just like, yeah, I switched your fucking dice because of course you're like, obviously you were cheating, I could tell that, so I switched it for real dice. And I like that a lot.
I'm going to add on to that. It's not that specific scene. It's the next one where they all confront her and she just starts whooping ass.
Yep.
And you like, oh, she actually does know how to fight. Everyone with a real sword, of course, is going to just like cut through her sword and like push her out of the way. But if they don't have swords or any like real bladed weapons, she's going to knock some people out.
Yeah, she is extraordinarily capable. And this episode really shows that in a way that I like. And last episode kind of did. Like, you got the sense that she was capable. But I didn't...
She was just overwhelmed.
We didn't get to see it as much.
Yeah.
So this episode really let her shine, I feel like. And, you know, like I said, the way that the characters got involved with this plot was a little thin. But ultimately what got them involved was, like, her sense of morality. And so, yeah. Like, cool. Way to go, you. I like it. Listen, I'm gonna be. Listen, MC. We missed our normal recording time, so we are recording this when it's nighttime for me. I am supposed to be sleeping right now. Normally, we record when it's nighttime for you. And so maybe that's part of why I'm a little down on this episode. But I just think this episode wasn't as exciting as the first one. But I still liked it. I don't want this to come across as too negative, because I still think the show's really good. It's just this episode was a little bit of a downswing from the first one. But not terrible.
I agree. And the problem is the next episode, it picks right back up again and is really good.
So much so. I am very excited about the next episode. I've already watched it. And the next episode is like, yeah, everything that I'm complaining about this episode is so much better next time around. So even though this has been short, we talked a lot about Ghost of Tsushima in the first half. So this episode is more Ghost of Tsushima episode than it is a Rurouni Kenshin episode. But I think that's it. Do you have anything else on this one?
No, I don't have anything.
All right. Well, then we will be back next time with episode 3 of Rurouni Kenshin, Swordsman of Sorrow, the man who stays his past. Until then, MC.
Don't change the channel?
Yes.
No.
Why are you always so uncertain?
Because I am.
Thanks for listening to The Best Animated Shows Ever, so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFCast or email us at BaseSFCast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFCast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work
for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.